This is Lightning Power Lunch with Dave Mishkin and Greg Linnelli on Lightning Radio.
Throughout a series, throughout games, there's going to be times where a team pushes on you, and we were able to come out of that most of the, pretty much the whole entire night. They got one on the power play, so that's a positive sign. And long series and a lot of confidence in the stretch.
I think at the end of the day, the more pucks, you know, you get on net with more bodies, more traffic, you know, better chances you have of scoring. They did a good job kind of boxing out there as well. So that's kind of us on the forwards to get there.
We just got to make sure that we fine tune our details in our game and how we can get some more shots and more offense. But it was a close game. Overall.
They're at home. It's game one. Crowd's pumped up. They had all this energy. Give them tons of credit. They went to a game plan, and we abandoned ours before it even started. And I give the guys credit. You know, they weathered the storm for like 12, 13 minutes or whatever it was, and then we played. You know, that's the problem. So, you know, 16 teams are out. Now there's only 16 teams left. So the margin of error is so much smaller now.
Yeah, it is. It is smaller. Game one, sometimes you never know how it's going to play out. I thought for the most part it was a pretty well-played game, especially if you are not on the side of the officiating, which we will get. I got a funny response from somebody. They don't follow me on Twitter, but sometimes these things happen when people tune in to a broadcast just to hear what's going on, and then they send you a tweet, and this guy sent me one, and it was pretty funny. I thought pretty innocent comment, but listen, this is just where we are right now. People were very emotional.
And by you or by me? I was pretty fired up at the end of the game.
I mean, he sent it to me, so I'm assuming it was geared towards me, and I'm okay with that. I'm fine with that. We're all adults here, and I'll share that with you as well. But it is Power Lunch on Lightning Radio. We are recapping Game 1, Playoff Edition. He is Dave Mishkin on that end. I am Greg Linnelli. Steve Erstick is our producer. We are taping, just to give you guys a heads up, you can still get involved on X.
And you're missing nothing in terms of what's happening with the Lightning as far as their practice is concerned, because while we are pre-taping, the practice will be occurring after the show airs. So even if we had gone live, the Lightning would not yet have been on the ice.
We did get
there was a roster move. So
yeah, let's do that. The Lightning did recall Max Crozier from Syracuse, and we know he played a little bit with the Lightning towards, I'd say, the middle to end of the year. 13 regular season games for the Lightning. I thought acquitted himself very well. Now Syracuse's season partner is over, correct?
Regular
Which
season.
Which is why regular season's over. Mm-hmm. So he's coming up, and Steve and I were talking before we came on. Maybe you can view that a couple of different ways. Did they just want to get him up here for some exposure? That could be it. I've been making the case. I think I asked you casually 3 or 4 weeks ago, you know, why aren't we seeing Max Crozier up here? You know, of all of the defensemen that I thought impressed being brought up, or even, you know, when you start talking about the bottom six and who the Lightning have depth-wise, I thought Crozier was as good as anybody. My sense is he's not being brought up here just to sit. Perhaps maybe this is an opportunity for him to actually play. I'm curious your first initial reaction when you saw that transaction.
Well, I'll give you that. And we will get into game one. We're not going to.
Oh, absolutely.
This is the most breaking news. So I did say that I understood why Crozier was in Syracuse, because the Lightning in there. Top six, you want to look at it that way, top six defensemen, the six defensemen that they have dressed regularly when they have had a lineup with six defensemen, not seven defensemen. They already are using four righties. Max Crozier was another righty. So if you're going to bring him up, assuming you're certainly not sitting Victor Hedman, and Emil Liljeberg has established himself, he's the other lefty, as a regular in the lineup, then either you're going seven defensemen with five righties, which seems really weird, or you're replacing one of the righties. That's why I thought it didn't make a lot of sense for them to call him up at the end of the regular season after they acquired Dumba. And when they acquired Dumba, Crozier went down. And unlike Liljeberg, who came back up, Crozier stayed down through the end of the regular season for Syracuse. So there are a couple things at play here. First of all, Syracuse has a playoff series upcoming. They had a bad final weekend, basically, in the regular season. They were in first place, which would have gotten them kind of sort of a bye, the way the AHL playoffs work. If they had finished first in their division, four plays five in the division in a best of three, and then the survivor gets the first place team in a best of five. Two plays three in a best of five. So you had Syracuse with a 1-point lead over Cleveland and Rochester, and Syracuse played on Saturday. Rochester and Cleveland did not play Saturday. They played Sunday. Syracuse was at home against Utica, which is a team that's going to miss the playoffs, but Utica has actually had a pretty good head-to-head year with Syracuse. I think they basically split, or maybe actually Utica won the season series because Utica won that final game in Syracuse. So Syracuse had to sit and watch as Rochester, which then I think played Utica and beat Utica, and Cleveland played a final game and won that game, leapfrog them. So Syracuse not only does not finish in first with the bye, they didn't even finish in second. So they are in a best of five series where they start on the road and they're going to play Rochester. If you remember, Greg, last year Syracuse and Rochester played a best of five in which Syracuse had home ice, won the first two at home, and then Rochester won the final three. So Syracuse plays Rochester. Game one is at Rochester Friday. Even if the plan is for Max Crozier to be in Syracuse's lineup for game one on Friday, the Lightning have time to call him up for game two, whether he is going to play in game two or not. They could even theoretically play him in game three on Thursday. And if they want him to be in Syracuse for the start of that series, they could navigate that. Like, that's doable. What my spidey sense is telling me, though, is they didn't call up Crozier just because Syracuse has this 4 or 5 day break. I think Crozier's coming up to play. I'm kind of with you. And if he's coming up to play, I think he is going to be partners with Lilleberg. I think that the Lightning have seen enough from this group of six on D that they've made a determination that they want to make an adjustment. That's a guess on my part. We're going to have to wait to see what the lineup looks like tomorrow night. But I think one of the other righty Ds, unless they go 11-7, which is possible, but otherwise one of the righty Ds is coming out. I think you're going to see Crozier and Lilleberg playing together as a pair. They were very, very good as a pair at every level. Like in Syracuse with the Lightning and training camp and rookie camp, they've kind of been linked throughout this first season together, and they've done very, very well. And if you were to ask me how I think it's going to unfold, I wouldn't be surprised if Dumba moves back with Chernak and Dumba's on the left side. And Nick Perbic, so I thought, played okay yesterday. I mean, we've been talking about him having to play on the left side. Looking at Perbic's numbers yesterday, he finished plus one, 15-22. I didn't think that he was put in tough spots playing the left side in the game yesterday, but that's kind of where I think the Lightning are going, but I might be completely wrong.
So in that scenario, if they don't go seven, he's sitting.
That's what I
basically threw out there, right? Right, right.
Yeah. But what do I know? I mean, I'm not in the coach's office. Maybe somebody's dealing with some kind of nagging injury and Crozier is coming up as insurance, or the Lightning feel that Crozier would be a better lineup decision than somebody who's battling an injury. I mean, that could be happening too, and we have no idea.
That is correct. I'm all for it. I think Perbix has been put in a tough spot playing where he
is. I agree with that. Yeah.
And I'm not sure that's fair to him, but this is kind of where we are, and we can reevaluate how we would look at the Lightning's decor as a whole once the season ends, and hopefully that's not for a while. But you and I have been pretty consistent. We both like Crozier's game.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this setting, if you think he's one of your top six along with Lilleberg, let's do it.
And this is putting the cart way before the horse, because we're focused on this year, this series, hopefully a long playoff run for the Lightning. This is another indication that when we look to the Lightning's offseason, whatever they want to do during the offseason, I think it's pretty clear Max Crozier is part of their plan moving forward next year at the NHL level.
Yep.
As is Emil Lilleberg, both of them.
Right. Yeah, 100%. And that's going to dovetail into the game. So that's the news. And if people want to react, they can.
And we'll learn more later today when the Lightning do not have a practice tomorrow. Lightning are staying out at the beach. It's a long way to the arena. I mean, it is. It's not as far as going all the way to Tampa, but it's long enough that today they're making the dedicated practice day. Tomorrow they'll do some stuff on the beach, like what they call activation. But at practice today, unless guys are sitting because they're nursing something, and we might see, for example, Glendening and Mott, who, you know, they came back from injury, and I thought they both played pretty well in game one. But, I mean, they are just coming back from being injured. Maybe they take today off, for example. But as it relates to the D-core, let's see how the D-core is aligned at practice today. And we can kind of break that down tomorrow in advance of game two.
Game one, I think sometimes we have to put it in perspective. I actually thought it was a better game from a an emotional perspective when you see sometimes guys running around, laying big hits, all the extra stuff that could come arise in a game like that between two teams who really don't like each other and who have met each other in the playoffs a couple of different times previously. I actually thought it was a pretty well-played game, and I'm a little surprised that Florida was able to do what they did defensively when it came to limiting Tampa Bay's opportunities. Why did that happen? We can get into that for the next hour. One of the things a lot of people will discuss, the lack of power play opportunities that Lightning did get. I do not want to minimize that. However, the Lightning can't rely on a series when it comes to their power play because of the inconsistencies that do come with officiating. You and I have been pretty consistent about it. I do think it's unfortunate that the Lightning's greatest weapon, in my opinion, next to Andrei Vasilevsky, happens to be their power play. And if that is minimized because of some inconsistencies or because the officials feel like swallowing the whistle and letting the players, quote unquote, determine the outcome of the game, as Chief said last night, in many ways, you are affecting the outcome of the game. So there will need to be some adjustments, I'm sure, from the Lightning's perspective, Dave, 5-on-5, on how to generate a bit more offense, or maybe even a lot more offense. I didn't think it was a terrible game by the Lightning, though, and I give credit to the Panthers for being able to, at least for the most part, keep things in check when it came to Tampa Bay's offense. They were pretty physical with Kucherov the whole way through. They didn't allow a ton of shots. The ones that did get through missed.
Yes.
And I think that's something that, look, it's now time for the Lightning to adjust. And if they come out tomorrow, Dave, and they're able to get game two, well, then it's not going to matter what they did in game one because you did what you set out to do.
See, I disagree with you on your point that you were surprised Florida defended as well as it did. I mean, let's not forget the Panthers. I mean, basically, they tied Winnipeg for the fewest goals allowed in the league this year. The reason that the Jets won the Jennings Award, Hellebuck won the Jennings Award, is they factored in shootout goals against. So they were tied in goals against prior to the shootout. The Panthers allowed two shootout. They had two shootout losses, and the Jets had one shootout loss. That's why Hellebuck won the Jennings Award for the lowest goals against by a goal. But basically, the Panthers and Jets were the best defensive teams in the NHL this year. However you want to analyze that, whether it was mostly goaltending or majority goaltending or majority of the team in front of the goalie, however you want to try to understand why those teams are so successful, at the end of the day, the Panthers were one of the two best teams at keeping the puck out of their own net, and they showed that in game one. So when you say the Lightning have to find a way to generate more, I agree, but it's not going to be easy unless the Panthers' standard slips a little bit. What happened to the Jets last night? They gave up six goals to Colorado and won. Like, I'm going to get back to Lightning Panthers, but like, if you had said to me before game one of Jets Avalanche, where you have a really dangerous offensive team against one of the best defensive teams in the NHL, it's a very compelling matchup. What I would have said was, whatever the over-under is, if it's the under, that's an advantage for the Jets. If it's the over, that's an advantage for Colorado. And they split the difference yesterday. It was definitely the over. The teams combined for 13 goals. I think I read it was like one of the highest scoring games in the first round, maybe game one of the first round.
And that's what I was expecting in game one, because things get a little crazier.
In that game, it did. But look around the league, Greg. Most of the other games were pretty low scoring. But the Jets ended up winning. So Hellebuck gives up six goals, which is like if the Avalanche go into game one, they're like, we're scoring six.
Yeah.
We should win. That didn't happen. Florida Panthers, though, did defend very well. And so what can the Lightning do to generate more chances? And you're right, they can't count on power play opportunities, although they may come. I think that it's going to be difficult. But while Point and Kucherov had very little time and space to do much of anything yesterday, and you're right, the Panthers are very physical with them, I think players of their ilk can make adjustments. So I'm going to put a pin in that. We'll come back to that after game two and see if the Lightning are able to generate more than really was a low number of scoring chances they had in the game yesterday. See if they can get more of their shot attempts on net. To that end, how do they score their first goal? Faceoff win, Stamkos shot on net, rebound shot Cirelli on net, third shot Hagel in the net. So three of their 19 shots came in the span of what, like 3 seconds, and it led to a goal. So if you get a shot on net, you maybe are getting a rebound as opposed to missing the net, right? But my biggest takeaway from game one was actually a positive one. And I wrote about this in my extra shift column. The Panthers defended at a very high level, yes. But I thought for the most part, the Lightning matched that. And that is probably going to be one of the biggest keys for the Lightning if they're going to have success in this series. They cannot give freebies to the Panthers because the Panthers are not going to give freebies to the Lightning. And the two goals the Panthers scored before the empty netter were both really, really well executed plays. They were. I mean, Reinhardt makes a great tip on the first goal, and that is an unreal pass from Barkov to Verhaeghe. Did Dumba fall asleep a little bit on the back door? He did, but Verhaeghe does like a big loop. He's at the right circle, gives it to Barkov, and he like skates like in an arc up to the blue line, around to the other side of the ice, and comes swerving in. It was almost like a quarterback hitting a wide receiver in stride. That was a really well-executed play. Sometimes you got to tip your cap to the other team. But if we look at the number of grade A chances the Panthers had, Coop said at the end of the game the chances were even. I think the Panthers had more chances than the Lightning, but they didn't have a lot of chances. Like, the Lightning made the Panthers earn what they got. And they didn't get much. There were the two saves Vasilevsky made in the first period without his stick on Tkachuk and Verhaeghe. And I thought once it became 2-1, the Panthers had some opportunities, maybe on counters. But if you look at that game, Greg, it was a low shot, low chance game. And if that's what the Panthers are going to be doing to the Lightning, then the Lightning need to be able to do that to the Panthers. And they showed it in game one after the first 12 to 13 minutes, where they were exhibiting a lot of the sloppy habits that we saw when they struggled during the regular season. But even then, it's not like the Panthers overwhelmed the Lightning and had, I think they had 8 or 9 shots before the Lightning recorded their first shot on net. But it's not like they racked up 10 scoring chances. They had their goal, and they had those back-to-back chances when Vasi made the two saves without his stick. But other than that, I thought the Lightning did it pretty well. They checked. For the most part, they protected the front of the net. They prevented a lot of those dangerous backdoor type passes. And once they got through the early minutes, they did execute pretty well coming out of their own zone. Like, that was a pretty good defensive performance for the Lightning. They didn't get rewarded, but that is the way we're going to need to see them play moving forward in the series. And the fact that they showed it in game one, I think, was a very positive sign. Now, I'm not being all sunshine and roses here. They did lose the game. And if they lose tomorrow, then they're looking at having to win 4 of the next 5 against one of the top teams in the league. Getting a split is going to be very, very important. But when we do look at the quote-unquote process, part of the process, and maybe one of the more important parts of the process in this series, I thought that they did a very good job, honestly. People may disagree with me, and that's fine. The game was 1-1 going into the third. We can get into the officiating, because I do have some thoughts on that. But had the penalty not been called on Nick Paul, and had the Panthers not gotten a power play to start the third, and had Verhaeghe not scored in that power play, that goal was the biggest goal in the game. because it completely changed the complexion of the third period. If you're a loosey-goosey defensive team, unlike the Panthers, up 2-1 in the third is not really like a lockdown situation. The Panthers locked it down, though. Once they got the lead back and we were in the third period, they locked it down. The game, the complexion of the game completely changed once the Panthers got that lead and it was in the third period. And it wasn't until really the Lightning pulled the goalie, honestly, and then they got the 6-on-4 that they started generating some looks because they had the extra guy on the ice. So my point is that had that game stayed 1-1, I think we would have seen a very different sort of third period. We would have. I mean, the Panthers wouldn't have been content just like chipping it out, getting it in deep, making the Lightning go 200 feet. They would have had to play a different sort of game. So if in game two we're in a similar situation where it's tied in the third period, first team to make a mistake might be the team that loses. So it's unfortunate that the Lightning were shorthanded and gave up that goal, because I would have loved to have seen that third period stay 1-1 for a while and see how the Panthers would have handled it. Instead, they got kind of a lifeline from the officials and they executed beautifully. Like, they made a great play on the power play to get the lead, and then they kind of puffed their chest out, and the Lightning were up against it in a game in which they didn't generate a lot, and now they had to generate. They had to get a goal, and it was just tough sledding for them against a really good defensive team.
And the shots that came through, Bobrovsky was pretty solid. There was a flurry there late in the game when the Lightning were pushing and Point had it to the right of Bobrovsky's pad. And I don't know if he was in a great position to make that count, but he did get a shot off. And Bobrovsky was there. Lilleberg, I think, was the one that did the cross-ice pass that got it over to Point. And then
that one was good. And then he made a save on Point during the 6-on-4.
Yeah.
Which he stopped. The Lightning would score in the 6-on-4, but Point's chance came with 50-some-odd seconds left. So, I mean, if Bobrovsky doesn't stop that, the Lightning have more time left to maybe get another goal and tie the game. But down 3-1 with under a minute to go, like, that's a tall order. So, as it turned out, I mean, it was a big save Bobrovsky made on Point on the 6-on-4. The one on the side of the net that you're talking about from Lilleberg was also a good chance, but I think the one that Point had right at the hash marks was a better chance. Bobrovsky made a really good save, and that allowed the Panthers to kill more time before the Lightning ended up scoring.
I know Chief was a little concerned, questioning the decision to pull the goaltender as early as the Lightning did.
But you know what? It was after an icing.
Yeah.
So I think they felt they had the matchup that they wanted because the Panthers couldn't put out their 5-on-6 unit. I think that factored in. And also, it was a game in which the Lightning were having trouble generating. So
that part I get.
Yeah, sure. I get
I'm not
it
sure
too.
I did. I don't disagree necessarily with it. I just thought it was a situation, big picture, that the Lightning didn't generate a ton of chances. They were looking to push some offense, partner. And, you know, they probably had a decent flurry late.
Stamkos had a chance on the 6-on-5 before the Tkachuk empty net goal.
Yeah.
It wasn't like the one he scored on was a tremendous chance. Bobrovsky wasn't getting it over. The one that he had on the 6-on-5 was a medium chance, and Bobrovsky was ready for it, made the save. Look, Bobrovsky did a good job. When he was asked to make key saves, he made them. So good on him. The Panthers got a little bit of a break, too, when Ekblad's clear hit a stanchion, came right to Tkachuk and center ice. But, look, you pull the goalie, stuff like that can happen. So you know,
I thought this game was more about what the Panthers did than what the Lightning didn't do. I think the Panthers, to your point, I was surprised, maybe I shouldn't, based off of the numbers they possessed in the regular season, that they were that buttoned up, Dave, defensively. I was thinking, yes, you can be that way in the regular season, but somehow game one is going to materialize where it's going to open you up a little bit. You're going to do some things you typically don't because the game is emotional, and the Lightning were going to get some chances, some good chances throughout the game. Really didn't happen.
And no, it didn't.
And that's okay. Understanding now that the Lightning, if this is how the series is going to be, not necessarily the Lightning not getting it, so few chances in game one, but maybe they aren't going to get 35 shots on goal and, you know, 2-on-1s three or four times in a game. You're going to have to bear down on the opportunities that you do get. And it doesn't necessarily come in the form of the power play. If you get them, make sure you take advantage of them if you can. But I thought that game the other day from Florida in some ways gives you a little bit of a big picture of how this team has evolved a little bit over the last couple of years too.
Well, and their deep playoff run probably helped. Like if you go four overtimes deep like they did against Carolina in game one of the Eastern Conference Final last year, I mean, you have to be able to defend. You have to be able to play the time score situation. And you have to be able to limit chances. So I think that they did learn from their run last year. And also Paul Maurice is coaching that way. Like Paul Maurice came in and wanted them to get better defensively, and they have. And now we're seeing the evidence of that. But it doesn't mean that they are unbeatable. Like, they are a really, really good defensive team. They're a really dangerous offensive team as well. And I thought the Lightning did a good job of limiting what they could do offensively. So let's see if they can replicate that. Do you want to get into the officiating? Because I know that was a hot topic.
Wait, was there issues with the officiating? No, go. Yes, yes, please.
Well, I didn't say there were. I just said get into the officiating. So look, a different set of referees might have called the game differently. There was a lot of physical stuff happening in that game. And some of it was right at the line. Some of it was over the line. None of it was called. None of it. So kind of scuffles after the whistle, hits on players after they had no longer, you know, they had the puck, they no longer had it, and it was a late check. I'm thinking of Tarasenko and Kucherov. You had Luostarinen come at Dumba when Dumba never had the puck and knocked him down. I think Lomberg and Dumba behind the Lightning net were tied up, and Lomberg wouldn't let Dumba up. Like, they let all that stuff go. Could a different officiating crew might have called that game more tightly? Yes. But I will give the two referees credit, and I will use that word, from the standpoint that that sort of stuff they were very consistent about letting go. They were. So if it's that sort of game, fine. I do think that that plays to the Panthers' advantage, because they are a very physical team. And in the regular season, only Anaheim was shorthanded more times than Florida. So if you're Florida, even though you are, you know, one of the top two defensive teams, the best defensive teams in the NHL, you have gotten there navigating through lots of penalty kills, because that's the way you play. Once you get into the playoffs, you're not going to change the way you play. You're not going to become less physical and less aggressive, even though you're understanding that you're taking on the Lightning, the team with the number one power play in the NHL during the regular season. And the Panthers didn't really change. Like, I think that they played much the same way that they always play. They were physical. They were kind of towing the line or going over the line. And if they got called for a penalty, then they got called for a penalty, but they weren't going to change what they were doing. They weren't called for penalties relating to the physical stuff. The one call that I thought was egregious was the one that proved to be, honestly, the biggest call of the game, the penalty on Paul. And I think I explained this after the game, and I'll get into it with you again. So prior to Paul's penalty, there were three minor penalties called. Pervix was called for holding in the first period. Stamkos was called for hooking in the second period. And then Lundell was called for tripping later in the second period. I really didn't have a problem with any of those penalties. They weren't like born from aggressive physical play, though. Like the aggressive physical stuff, they basically decided to let go. They're like, this is playoff hockey. I know that drives you crazy, Greg, but they were fairly consistent in letting that go. The kind of stick fouls, though, or like grabbing someone and holding them, they did call. And the Perbix play, I'm trying to remember who he held, but the guy was skating behind the Lightning net, and he had a step on Perbix, and Perbix grabbed him. So, like, was it a scoring chance? No. But did it potentially slow up a possible look for the Panthers? Yeah. So I get it. That's fine. But you're in a 1-1 game. It's the last minute of the second period. And Nick Paul is in front of the net with Kulikov. The puck goes back to the point, and then it ends up kind of sliding into the corner. So Paul and Kulikov move from in front of the net to kind of the goal line extended in anticipation of the puck maybe coming behind the net. Kulikov actually grabs Paul's jersey. I mean, he doesn't like tug on it, but he did grab it. You see Paul's jersey get pulled back a little bit. At the same time, Anton Lundell kind of skates in front of Nick Paul. They bump into each other and Lundell falls down. They called holding on Nick Paul. Now, I never saw like a great replay of it. I saw kind of a grainy one, but I didn't actually see Paul hold Lundell. They wanted to call interference on Paul because he knocked down a guy who didn't have the puck. I think that that penalty would make more sense, but that call was so inconsistent with everything else that happened in the game. Like it had no bearing on, first of all, the Lightning were the team in the offensive zone. The Lightning didn't gain an advantage from Lundell falling down, and it did look like he just fell over. Like he sold it, honestly. So for a player to sell a penalty in a game where you've let all this physical stuff go, and you're not just going to say, get up, or two guys kind of battling for position and you fell down, tough. To give the Lightning a penalty there, which at that point made the power plays 3-1 Panthers, was extremely tough and inconsistent. That's the word I will use. It was inconsistent with how the rest of the game was called. And then to have the Panthers score on that power play in what was the biggest goal of the game made it even more tough to swallow. And I got to be honest, the one they called on Verhaeghe at the end of the game, like that was nicky-nack. It really was. Like maybe in game 12 of the regular season, they're like, well, cross-check. Like he bumped Kucherov. And you know what that reeked of, Greg? It reeked of, well, we gave the Panthers this kind of generous power play and they scored on it. They got the lead. Now it's 3-1. We got a minute and change left. Let's give the Lightning a final power play before the game ends. So the power plays finished 3-2. If that's the case, that's BS. I'm sorry. Like, and that's what it felt like. Maybe the referee actually felt it was a cross check on Verhaeghe, but even that one was kind of inconsistent with what had happened earlier in the game, but it was like, thank you very little. You know, like you're giving the Lightning a power play with a minute and change left when the game's 3-1. So I know a lot of fans had a problem with like Tarasenko hits Kucherov late. He did. It could have been a penalty. It wasn't. Louis Dreen in comes at Dumba. Should have been a penalty. Wasn't. Lomberg behind the net. Could have been a penalty. Wasn't. Post-whistle scrums. Could have been some penalties. They weren't called. Lightning fans want to get upset about that because they're facing a team that plays a rough game and tends to get called for penalties and they weren't. That's their prerogative. I didn't have a problem with that. If that's the way they wanted to call game one, fine. My problem was that on a nicky-nack, nothing play, late in the second period, where, honestly, the Panther guy tries to sell a penalty in a game where you're like, this is big boy hockey. We've established that. To call it that penalty was extremely tough to swallow. But that's the way it goes. I mean, referees are human, and give the Panthers credit. They took advantage of it. They made a great play on the power play. It was a fantastic pass from Barkov, who, again, to me, was the best player on the ice yesterday.
He was good. There's no doubt about it. Salt Shack says, good grief. Blaming the refs? You from Toronto, bro?
Well, who's... That was, look, that was I'm guy. Not that blaming the refs.
That was...
Yeah.
I'm saying directed towards me.
Okay. Well, look, I'm not... I even said on the air yesterday, the referees are not the reason why the Lightning lost the game. They had 60 minutes to positively affect the outcome of the game. What I am saying is that one call was a very important call, and it was inconsistent with how the rest of the game was called. And anybody wants to argue with me on that, they're going to lose that argument. But I'm not saying that's the reason why the Lightning lost the game. Look, they had 19 minutes left down 2-1 to try and get the game tied. Give the Panthers credit. They D'd up. They did. I don't know what you said,
No, I what I said was kind of what we've been discussing on the show, that if you're going to swallow the whistles, that's going to impact a team like the Lightning a little bit more than any other team.
Yeah.
Because they do rely on the power play. In fact, I caught a snippet of Ryan Callahan, who was doing the game partner
on TV.
Yes,
he was. He's doing game two as well, by the way.
And the one part I just happened to tune in, he was talking about the Lightning and their power play. And basically he said, and I don't want to put words in Callie's mouth, but if you limit and really shut down the Lightning, you don't give them chances on the power play, you've got a really good chance of beating them. I thought that was a pretty upfront comment. I don't know how much faith he has in what they're going to do 5-on-5, but his point was, look, you take out their power play, and if you don't give them as many chances, it's a different Lightning team. And something to keep in mind this series.
And what I would say in response to that is, in the playoffs, generally you don't have a lot of chances, no matter what team you are. So yeah, the Lightning generate a lot of offense from their power play. So if you limit their number of power play chances, that is true. And the Lightning may have a harder time generating offense 5-on-5, which is why they have to defend as well as the Panthers are defending.
That is true.
And I thought they did that in game one. They had a chance to win game one. They did. This was not some kind of runaway game. They were right there after 40 minutes. And look, as much as we talk about the Lightning's power play, look, they scored in the 6-on-4. They had one power play chance when the game was 1-1. And they did very little with it. They did not have a good power play after the Lundell trip. So.
Agreed.
Look, they have to own that. I mean, they didn't get a lot of power play chances, but they didn't get zero. I'm excluding the one at the end of the game.
Al says, I guarantee you the egotistical officials really believe they called a perfect game. And what's worse is the NHL completely agrees. So the second highest penalized team in the NHL goes against the best power play and only takes one penalty in 59 minutes. Wow. Number one BS.
But I think they made the choice, Al, to let the physical stuff go uncalled. And the Panthers did stay away from the stick fouls, basically. So it makes sense. Look, I didn't have as much of a problem. I know I'm repeating myself. I didn't have as much of a problem that Lightning only had one power play. I had the problem with the penalty on Nick Paul. That's the one that I had a problem with. But you get calls go against you in games, whether it's regular season or playoffs, and then you have to find a way to kill them off, and the Lightning didn't.
As you can imagine, a few more fans going that route. Matt says, when did the Panthers acquire Wes McCauley? That was a good pickup, too, by then. Thought we would have had a better chance if the Panthers would have gotten the penalty for a few obvious plays. Not panicking, though. Just have to readjust and come back swinging.
Yeah, I don't think that you can lay this on the officiating. You can't. And I hope that... Look, I made my point. I'm not laying this on the officiating. I think that the Lightning have to go into a game expecting that physical play is not going to get penalized.
And if it does, then we have problems, though, because what have I said to you, and what do you've agreed with this? You've got to be consistent. You've got to be consistent with calling the game.
Whoever the game two referees are, if they lay down the law in the first 5 minutes of the game, that, for example, the Tarasenko hit on Kucherov is going to be called interference, then the teams understand that and they adjust accordingly.
That is true. That's what I want.
And again, I use the word credit. I give the two referees credit, Nicholson and was Kendrick Nicholson and Wes McCauley. So I give those guys credit for being consistent about not calling penalties for borderline like late hits or kind of like crossing the line. If they are going to make that decision, as long as the game doesn't get out of hand, and it didn't get out of hand, then both teams understand that.
Maybe
the game two referees will look at it differently, though.
Don says, do they have the same officiating crew for the full 7-game series?
No. So every round they whittle down the crews. So like the referees that have been deemed the best in the regular season get to work round one of the playoffs, whatever that number is, but they do a rotation. Same with the linesmen. And then they whittle it down because there are fewer games once we get to the second round. I don't have the league, I think, releases the officials that are working round one. I haven't seen the list this year. But if you just look at the games that have been played, you can see who the referees are.
Do you think
right?
they should have the same crew for the full series?
No.
You don't like that?
I don't think so.
No, why is that? Is that just because you think if there's a bias that
well, let's
you
say
that, you get that bias out?
Yeah, I mean, let's say that maybe I'm not making sense, but like let's just say for the sake of argument that Wes McCauley and Kendrick Nicholson don't call penalties due to physical play. I'm just going to simplify it that way. Well, that will benefit the Florida Panthers. It will, because they play a physical game and they tend to take a lot of penalties. So by mixing up the officials, you may get an officiating crew that is like, not so fast, Kowalski. This game, you're going to have to watch your P's and Q's. I think that it keeps teams honest. But I may be wrong about that. That's the way the league has done it for as long as I can remember. So I guess I never really had a problem with it.
Yeah. Let's see. I want to go to another question. Al back on it says, one has to wonder if Cooper may go 11-7 to get another lefty and also disrupt the Florida game plan on Cochin Point. That was an hour ago when we were taping this.
Well, show. I don't know if Hayden Fleury is able to play. And Calvin DeHaan, look, it says a lot that they're calling up Crozier because they do have DeHaan as a healthy extra. If you were to ask me my gut, I think the Lightning go with 12-6 tomorrow and Crozier is in. That's what I think the lineup is going to look like.
I think that's fair.
Again, I may be wrong, but. And it's on Cochin Point to find a way to more effectively and consistently break down the Florida decor. They had the one shift in the second period. It came actually after the Lightning killed off the Stamkos penalty and they buzzed in the offensive zone. That was their best shift of the game.
Yeah.
5-on-5, but correct. They didn't get rewarded for it. Also, there's a possibility that Hagel may move onto that line, which is something John Cooper did near the end of the third period. So we'll see what the top six will look like for game two.
We appreciate that, Al. Yeah, I would agree. Go 12-6. And then you know what? If something happens where you don't like that lineup, maybe you can change things up again for game three. And John Cooper will start mixing and matching, you know, from that perspective. This question comes from Patty. Said, guys, how did Glendening look? I know he was banged up coming into the game.
I thought he was fine. Let me see his final face-off numbers. He was 3-2. But I know that he took a couple of shorthanded faceoffs, and I think he won both of them. Yeah, the Lightning actually went 4-1 on shorthanded faceoffs. They did quite well in that regard. But I will say, on the first penalty kill the Lightning had, which was early in the game, they were down 1-0, and that was when Perbix took the penalty. Glendening took the faceoff against Barkov to start the kill, won it. And then there was a whistle, maybe 20, 25 seconds into the power play. There was another faceoff, same spot, the right of Vasilevsky, and Glendening went to the bench and Nick Paul came out and took the draw. So that said to me that Glendening didn't feel quite right on the faceoff, on the first faceoff, because why would you send a lefty out to take it on his weak side when you have Glendening? And Mott stayed out there, so it's not like the Lightning made a change. And I think Glendening then rejoined Mott later on the kill, but later in the game, he took other faceoffs. So I think it's safe to say that Glendening, like, he is not 100%, but he is playing through his injury. And he was effective. I mean, beating Barkov in a faceoff is no small feat. Barkov's faceoff percentage for the season was higher than Glendening's.
Yeah.
One of the many things Barkov does exceptionally well.
He does. And
I don't think the injury is going to take Glendening out of the lineup unless something else happens, right?
Yeah.
He's going to, he knows his pain threshold. He is going to play through it.
This question comes from Steve, not our Steve, but a different Steve. He said, guys, should Vasi have stopped the first goal from Reinhardt? Well, that was
tough. Yeah, it was a tip. It wasn't like a tip with velocity. It was like it changed speeds, but it changed directions pretty drastically. I don't think either goal was on Vasi.
No. I think anytime something is deflected, it's hard to critique the goaltender. In fact, I don't think you ever do in those instances. It was, I think you nailed it there. The velocity wasn't as such where it just beat him clean. It looked like, you know, he had time to react, but I think anytime you're dealing with a deflection in a goaltender's position is so much about timing.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to critique, you know, where they're headed and if that was a soft goal or not. So, no, I would disagree there, Steve. I don't think that was a soft goal. I mean, look, I think if you take a step back, and I know Lightning fans don't want to hear it, I mean, that was a playoff game.
Yeah.
I mean, it really was. It had, you know, the one thing it didn't have, I was anticipating all the other stuff. You know, the late hits, the cheap hits.
Right.
Things get ugly.
Yeah, it didn't get out of hand. Not in game one.
No, and maybe anyway. We still see that, you know, later. Well could. But I thought for the most part, the emotions were controlled. I actually thought it was more important for the Panthers to have emotional control, because I think they're on a mission this year, Dave, to get back to that Stanley Cup final and win it. Not to say the Lightning aren't, but right. Panthers haven't done anything. And I think with this group, sometimes that urgency allows your game to play a certain way. And I think that dovetails into the motions of a game, being smart. And I think, you know, maybe in years past, we would have seen Lombard take another run at a player and lose his cool, or Tkachuk do something nasty. They still may. It may happen in a 7-game series. But I thought, at least in game one, everybody, for the most part, kept their composure. And, you know, I don't know if I was really anticipating that, but we did. And that's just kind of where we are at Bolts Radio.
Can I just make a point? It wasn't only in game one. I've seen this really throughout the year. Boy, do other teams hate Mikey Acemont. I mean, they just, I don't know what it is. They take runs at him. They come at him after whistles. And maybe because he plays for the Lightning, I'm not noticing it. But clearly he gets under the skin of the other team. I mean, do you notice this, Craig? Goodness gracious.
He does.
Like, the Panthers were targeting him, basically.
He does. And, you know, the thing about it is, though, Dave, he does play over the line. And Phil has made that comment to you on the broadcasts. You know how he hates the extra stuff after the whistle blows. Why is he coming in there to just walk? Acemont does that a lot, and I can understand that. So I'm not completely surprised that Acemont, not many people like playing against him. Let's put it that way. But you know what, though? He would probably tell you he's not playing his game if you don't have a lot of people reacting and going at him. So I think that's just how he has to get himself ready for the game, and we'll kind of play it from there. But yeah, I would anticipate Acemont, you know, probably going over the line a little bit in this series.
Look, he had one of the best scoring chances the Lightning got in that game at the end of the first period. He had a breakaway.
Yep.
Put it off the top of the crossbar.
Right. And, you know, look, you know, we talk about faceoffs being a big deal. The Hagel goal came directly from a faceoff win.
Yeah, yeah, so let me get into that. That was an interesting play. This is more of the hockey 101 nerdy stuff, but if you're interested, great. If not, tune me out for the next 2 minutes. But generally, you want your centerman to be on a strong side, whether it's in the offensive zone or defensive zone. When you're on your strong side, it means your stick blade is closer to the linesman. So that's a faceoff in the Florida end. It's to the left of Bobrovsky. Panthers have Bennett, who's a lefty, so he's on a strong side. The Lightning had Stamkos, Cirelli, and Hagel out there, so Stamkos is going to take the draw on his strong side. You can get more leverage when the shaft of your stick is away from the official, if that makes sense. So Stamkos is thrown out of the faceoff. So Cirelli, a lefty, comes in to take it. So Cirelli is now on his weak side. But because he's in the offensive zone, if he's able to win the draw on his backhand, the puck is going to slide basically from the circle backwards toward the middle of the ice, where Stamkos now is positioned because Stamkos is no longer taking the faceoff. Bennett has an advantage there. Generally, a centerman on a strong side will have an advantage against a centerman on his weak side, unless you're talking about one of the top faceoff guys in the league. And some guys on their weak side try and sweep their stick through the dot to win it on their forehand. Phil did that a lot, actually. Crosby does that a lot. He likes to win faceoffs on his forehand when he's on his weak side. Cirelli tried to win it on his backhand. He wins it. So it actually comes right to Stamkos in a dangerous area. And that started, that was the first domino to fall, where he got a quick shot off. It was on net. There was a rebound. Cirelli is able to win the puck for the second shot. And that was to the, he's at the bottom of the right faceoff circle. He shoots to the far pad. When you shoot to the far pad low and there's a rebound, it's usually going right in the middle of the ice. And it came right to Hagel and he buried it. But that goal doesn't happen if Stamkos isn't thrown out of the faceoff circle, ironically. It's just that Cirelli won right. The faceoff. I mean, we see that with Ovechkin a lot. Like the years that Ovechkin played with Backstrom in the offensive zone to the left of the goalie, they wanted Backstrom to take it on his weak side because if he was able to win it, it came right to Ovechkin in a prime scoring area. And he scored a lot of his goals. I mean, a lot is relative. He has scored a lot of goals. He has scored his fair share of goals right off faceoffs from that very spot. But the challenge is for the centerman to win it on his weak side. And Cirelli did.
Little things of the game. And Hagel did a nice job crashing the net. You love to see that too. And that's kind of what he can do.
Hagel was very good yesterday. I made him third star.
Yeah. I can't disagree with you on that one. So did you, I mean, honestly, coming away from game one, you're disappointed they lose. But did you come away thinking, man, I don't know if the Lightning aren't going to have an answer here at all in this series?
Well, they have to maintain it. And I do think like all the comments about generating more chances, like those comments are fair. I mean, the Lightning scored one goal in the first 59 minutes and 50 seconds of the game. It didn't have a lot of chances. They may need to cobble together a few more looks and maybe not missing the net on as many of their shot attempts would help. Maybe you go for a meat and potatoes approach. That's where you make adjustments over the course of a series, right? So instead of trying to make a pass, you just get a puck to the net and crash it. And maybe you score a quote-unquote greasy one. We'll see. I mean, we'll see if they have more shots and more attempts in game two.
Yeah,
but it was not a bad start to the series for the Lightning, despite the outcome.
Doug says, guys, if Crozier is in the lineup, is some of that because of what he can do offensively moving the puck?
I just think that he's a very well-rounded player. He's cool under pressure. He moves the puck well. He's smart. He plays his position well. He has chemistry with Liljeberg. I mean, he really showed very well during his time with the Lightning. I just think the Lightning, once they acquired Dumba, they had so many right-handed defensemen, and he was waiver-exempt, talking about Crozier, like it made sense to send him down.
That is true. So I think he's going to get an opportunity to play tomorrow, and I think if he shows well, I think you'll look at that and say the team made a commitment to him and see if they stick with him for the rest of the series. Because my take is if you're going to bring up a young defenseman like this and throw him into the playoffs, I think mentally you've already made that decision. You want to see what he can do and
yes.
to gain that valuable experience. My sense is why wouldn't you keep him in the lineup unless he's a complete disaster, which I think we're hoping he's not.
Right.
And so that's probably how I would evaluate things when it comes to the Lightning and Crozier. And, you know, look, we'll see if it plays out that way. Any last closing thoughts, partner, as we head into game two tomorrow?
Well, the home teams are 6-0 to start the playoffs, which I guess is a little surprising. I mean, sometimes you see the road team steal one in a game one. But other than that Colorado-Winnipeg game, I would say for the most part, the game ones around the league were what you would expect from kind of playoff contests, which is they were tight checking. They were, for the most part, low scoring. I know a couple of teams got to four goals. And maybe they had an empty netter in there to help the cause to get to four goals. But generally, we were looking at low scoring, low chance games. And that is not surprising to me. I guess I'm a little surprised that, you know, there wasn't one road team to win so far. The final two series start later tonight in the West. Earlier tonight, we have game two for Boston, Toronto, and game two for Carolina Islanders. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm not making some, like, strong declaration about what I think of the first couple of days of the playoffs, but it is interesting. It's interesting that the home team was able to hold serve and that really we saw tight checking, low scoring games right off the bat with the one notable exception.
We'll see if it changes tomorrow, if we see some pushback from the road teams, and we will have that coverage for you guys tomorrow starting at noon. We will be live. And then, of course, the puck dropping a little later in the evening, 7:30 start, pregame at 7. Partner, we'll have all the coverage, and we'll break it down.
Sounds good. Talk to you tomorrow.
He is Dave Mishkin. I'm Greg Linnelli. Thanks to Steve Versnick as well for producing and engineering. And again, if you want to hit us up on X, please do at Bolts Radio. We will make sure to read your questions, your comments on the air, and make you a big part of this show because we always enjoy having you on. You've been listening to Power Lunch right here on Lightning Radio.